Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for January 29th, 2017. I'm Nima Nadiri alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review a memorable fortnight at the Australian Open. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for the rest of the Grand Slam season, including the French Open, Wimbledon, and US Open. Before this week's show begins, let's introduce our co-host Parsa. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Still relishing that five-set thriller down in Melbourne.
Parsa, I mean, you know what? And to everybody out there, how lucky are we, you know, as tennis people, just people generally, fan, whatever you want to be, a fan, a commentator, a player, whatever it is, that you're able to witness this type of a tournament. We needed this from many different perspectives, as well as in the tennis world. We've had some relative duds in Grand Slams, I would say. Not very compelling storylines, but you have, you know, some of the most decorated champions in the past 20 years, such as Serena Williams, Venus Williams, Rafa Nadal, and obviously Roger Federer, just making the finals of their respective fields and just playing awesome tennis and giving us so much to remember, as long as, you know, a few other players. And just very lucky to witness that, Parsa. And, you know, I want to give a quick shout out to Dennis Istomin, who made this a memorable fortnight, to Misha Zverev, who made this a memorable fortnight, as well as for Lucic Baroni, who, you know, first made her semifinals here 17 years ago. She's gone through so much, Parsa, and then she's coming back here, you know, in tears, making the semis and playing Serena. And you have Rafa Nadal coming back from a wrist injury. Roger Federer taking 6 months off to win his 18th Grand Slam. You have Venus Williams, almost 37, you know, dealing with autoimmune disorders and all of this other stuff, coming back to make the finals. And then you have the greatest women's player ever in Serena Williams, you know, winning her 23rd Slam. And I mean, just still there, Parsa, back to number one in the world. Just wicked stuff happening this tournament. Super happy. I mean, I stayed up, barely slept last night, but I don't care. And it's fully well worth it. And it's just an awesome tournament. I wish it was going on for another week so we could see some cool stuff like this happen. But, you know, now it's our time to, you know, sit back a little bit and reflect and rewind. And, you know, let's start, Parsa, first off with the women's. So we had Serena, you know, come in looking for her 23rd, trying to distance herself from Steffi Graf, still in search of Margaret Court's 24 majors. So how did you see this tournament unfold for Serena, as well as for Venus, who, in her sister, who she beat 4-4 in the finals? I mean, back to top gear, is this going to be another Serena slam season where she's going to win a bunch of them? Or what are your thoughts on the match and the rest of her 2017 season here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously her training was very, very good. In the off season, and she dominated the field, Nima, not losing a set. You know, she had the formula of the champion going. She had her mental game in full gear. When her serve wasn't going, her ground strokes were amazing. When her ground strokes were making a few errors, her serve was amazing. And when they all connected together, she was the equivalent of Steph Curry for the Golden State Warriors, unstoppable. And you know, it's just a really well done effort, and something that I hope people get to appreciate, you know, because she's not going to be around forever. And I was trying to think, Nima, like, is this even possible to get such a superior athlete again? You know, the game has changed, and I don't know. You know, she's just so much better than the competition. You know, and it doesn't have to necessarily be physical anymore. She used to be physically better, but she's also mentally at such an advantage. She has so much strong belief and resolve. And I think that this brings her to a stratospheric position in athletes, all athletes, men and women.
Yes.
And, you know, it's unique. It's something that we really haven't seen much of in athletics. She's a warrior through and through, and she's proving it time and time again. And it's up to the field to find the answer to her, as they have in the men's game, you know, with the top guys that are sort of, now there's a big four or five or so going on, plus some young guns and all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's that next level on the WTA tour, you know, what's it going to be? And, you know, but appreciate Serena while she's around.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to touch on your question there, you know, on the men's side, we kind of see like a guy like Alex Zverev, you know, the young German. We could see him maybe as he continues to flourish, you know, to come in and really, you know, go hard. And he's got such a big forehand, big backhand, big serve, and he'll be able to do some damage. But on the women's side, I really don't see anybody coming up that I can tout as being such a dominant force in the game as Serena is. I really don't see that. And I mean, lo and behold, if it happens, it happens. But at this point, I don't see a youngster. I mean, even if you look at Angie Kerber, I mean, she's almost 30 years old, right? She's not a spring chicken either. So I don't really see an 18, 19-year-old that's coming up on the women's side that's going to be able to take over the mantle of Serena. And until somebody can really challenge her, I mean, she could really have a couple more years right here at the top, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. For sure, she can be there for a while. It all comes down to health now. You know, as you saw, you know, Federer said at the end of his match, end of his tournament, you know, if I'm not here next year, you know, this is a great way to go out or whatever, because he's very well aware that, you know, making a bathtub for his kids could end his career. And I think Serena's got a lot of mileage. You know, at the same time, she's done a terrific job of managing her schedule since she's been 16 years old, since her whole life, really.
Yeah.
Richard Williams, you know, has done a phenomenal job in bringing his daughters up and not having them overplay and maintaining their balance in life. And so, you know, barring injury, she's going to be around for a while. I mean, her sister is how old now? 37?
Almost 37, yeah. And she's going to be 36 this year herself. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at the dynamic of these two, I mean, not taking anything away from Venus, because it was tremendous. She's worked so hard during the off season, as Serena alluded to during the on-court ceremonies there. You know, this matchup really comes down to me to second serves, and that's really about it. I mean, if you look at this particular match, Parsa, we had Serena winning 46% of her second serves to just 29% for Venus, and you had Serena with 27 winners to 23. Unforced errors plus 4, and you had Venus at 21 winners to 25 unforced errors, so a minus 4. So I think when you put those two things into the equation, you really get your result, because it was a 4-4 score line. You had Serena breaking 4 times, Venus breaking twice, so 2 of those will get canceled out. So it really comes down to, you know, a couple points here and there, and that's your service game. And it's not like it was 1-1 or, you know, something like that, so it's pretty close. And that's really about it. 1 hour and 21 minutes, which is pretty routine, but it just really comes down to Serena has the best second serve in women's tennis history. And you know, Venus can you know, slam it herself, but her second serve has always been a liability, and her forehand's been a little bit choppy. And I think that's really what it comes down to. I think if you saw, you know, Venus have throughout all of these years a better second serve and a smoother forehand, she probably would have been well into double digits in my eyes in Grand Slams as well. So, but needless to say, great effort from both. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously now they both head to clay, which is, you know, not their favorite service. Still some tennis to be played on hard courts in Indian Wells in Miami, as alongside some other big events. But, you know, we look towards the French Open for the next slam. And I think they can still both go deep. Serena, obviously, more than Venus. But, you know, this has definitely got to give Venus hope to playing until she's probably close to 40 years old, I would say.
Yeah, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, the resolve of these women are quite incredible and something to be marveled at. I don't know if there needs to be too much of a discussion for it other than to say that and appreciate and acknowledge that they're incredible and amazing human beings, and they are the epitome of, you know, maximizing their potential. They're doing everything they can, and they're going to use it all up as they should. And they realize how blessed and lucky they are, and they're taking advantage of it.
For sure. And so, Parsa, just a few words now. First, let's speak of Coco Vandeweghe, who made the semis, beat a slew of good players, including, you know, Muguruza and Angie Kerber and Bouchard. So she had a fantastic tournament. What do you see, you know, in her future? What do you see? I mean, she's got very athletic game. I believe I never knew she was about 6'1". So she's a pretty tall girl. You know, very nice, smooth, Sampras-esque motion. You know, she's got that little foot raise at the beginning, and she goes back, and she's got really nice shoulder turn. She really slams that serve, and she just hits the heck out of every shot. Temperament obviously still needs to improve. Fitness can get a little bit better, but I think overall, can you see somebody like Coco Vandeweghe winning Grand Slams in the future?
I mean, that's a tough question. You know, I'm not a big buyer. You know, and tennis is very challenging day in and day out, and someone can get hot for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
To win a Grand Slam, you're really the type of player that has a tremendous amount of consistency. That's her next step. You know, until that happens, I think, which is a big one for her, I think that, you know, it remains to be seen. But does she have the firepower and the talent to do so? Absolutely. She was, at certain times, was playing the best tennis in the tournament. So, you know, but she has to believe and maintain that level and prepare to maintain that level mentally, physically, emotionally, and we'll see if she can do it. But she's really put herself in a good space, and she can now improve on a great result.
Yeah, no doubt. And then you have, you know, somebody like Lucic Baroni, who came in 34 years old. Last time she made the semifinals here was, I believe, 17 years ago, which is just, I mean, you can't get more remarkable than that. And she's basically, you know, really been off the radar, suffered through a lot of personal issues. And now she's back in the game playing some wonderful tennis, defeated Pliskova in the quarters before losing to Serena in the semis. And, you know, wonderful demeanor and so much love for the sport, which is what we all love to see. And, you know, very nice serve. Hits a very clean, flat ball herself. And I personally wish her nothing but the best. Can you see her building on this? Or, you know, at 34, I mean, we're not all Serena Williams out there, or even Venus, right, that we can play, you know, into the late or mid-30s. So do you see this as kind of like, you know, her swan song? Or can Lucic Baroni build on this and have a decent year where she gets close to, you know, top 15, top 10?
I think she can continue to build, to be honest with you. 34 is still generally young, especially for someone who hasn't been playing full-time the whole time.
Yes.
So, you know, her body's going to be a different wear and tear level than her age suggests. And, you know, we'll see, but the game, again, is trending in this direction. The later, you know, the older you are, you still have an opportunity and a chance. And, you know, with the technology, the strings, with fitness and dieting and, you know, they call it, you know, training schedules and things like that, where they have peaks and they have downtime and everything is planned out. You know, the athletes are getting older and older, and they're able to be successful at a later age. And I'm sure this semifinal run will give her the finances necessary to continue to build towards the top of the game.
I believe so as well. Okay, Parsa, as we leave the women's side, which was truly memorable, we move on to more memorable moments with the men's final that just ended a short while ago between Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer, two longtime friends, foes. I mean, two of the greatest champions in sport, period, in my opinion. I know a lot of people out there would agree. We had Roger Federer prevailing in five sets, being down 3-1 in the fifth, reeling off five straight games to defeat Rafa, ninth seed, 3 hours, 37 minutes. I thought it was very fitting, Parsa, that the last time Pete Sampras won, you know, the U.S. Open and he retired, he was the 17th seed. And you have Fed coming in and, you know, beating Stan in five sets, beating, you know, Nadal in five sets, and beating Nishikori in five sets, you know, destroying. But he had a tough draw, man. And the guy comes through, and at 35 and some change, just, I mean, amazing tennis today. You know, the only time I've seen guys hit the ball that hard and that flat, you know, Davidenko comes to mind when he was in, when he won the World Tour Finals, was playing like basically video game tennis, was just all off the rise, dictating like crazy. Del Potro, a little bit at his peak, especially with the forehand, just amazing. I mean, even though, you know, Federer had, you know, quite a bit of unforced errors, he had 57 unforced errors, he hit 73 winners. So I think he would take that any day of the week. And Parsa, you saw a clear-cut game plan right from the get-go. He said, listen, today I'm going to be loose. I'm going to come out here, and I'm just going to hit every single shot as hard as I can. And it worked out. I mean, Parsa, I'm just going to read through Fed's stats quickly. He won 62% of his first serve points. Pardon me, he got in 62%, won 76% of his first serve points, 49 of the second, 73 of net points. He broke on six occasions, with which is quite a bit, even though he had 20 breakpoint chances. I know you've talked about that in the past. You can get into that. He had 73 winners to 57 unforced errors, and he ran a little bit less overall than Nadal, as well as per point. So, I mean, what an effort. Two things, Parsa, before you jump in here. Why hasn't he played this type of style before? And why do you think he decided to do it? Was it because of his age? And is it because he said, listen, I just played a five-setter against Stan. Even though I had 2 days off, I'm not going to come out here and try to grind with this guy, even though Nadal kind of was trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, what was the first part of the question, or was that the entire question?
Yeah, so basically, why did Federer overall choose to play such an attacking style? And why do you think that type of a style was absent before? Was it, relatively speaking, let's be critical here for a second, was it because Nadal is not the Nadal of maybe 5-6 years ago? And is, even though he's playing amazing, his ball is potentially not jumping as high, so Federer can be that aggressive and hit that flat? Or is it just, was it a tactical thing before he thought that he could maybe grind with this guy and try to win that way?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's the evolution of his game in the last 2 years, 3 years that he's been going through, which is attack at first moment. And then every time he would play Nadal in the last 2 years, even though he won his last time in Basel, he would get into these defensive points with him and wouldn't strike. And so I think that's a very, very important distinction. I think he went out and he was on purpose going to play short points to limit the brutality of the rallies and to keep his legs fresh and to keep himself in the right frame of mind. At the same time, to deter Nadal from getting his rhythm. And then I think a secondary thing, or maybe the major factor, is really the court surface. The ball wasn't bouncing as high as you saw the replays on from today's match. The ball, the highest it really got was to his shoulder height, which is still manageable. Whereas if you go to Roland Garros or old Australian Open, the ball really, or even Wimbledon, the ball's really bouncing up above his shoulder and becomes a very, very difficult ask for Federer to be that aggressive. So I think partially he learned something from Dimitrov. I think partially he's fed up with, you know, getting into those long rallies. You know, as I wrote on your Facebook, I was like, all right, you know, Nadal's going to win because Federer's going to be 2-for-14 on the break points. And that didn't happen. He was able to convert. He was a little bit more aggressive. He had a lot of opportunities still, but he went for it this time. And he was the one, as he said in his post-match presser, he was the one that was going after it. And that ultimately made the difference. You know, and that's it. I mean, I don't expect, you know, you're not going to see this on the clay court. It's going to be a dominant Rafa. But in terms of Federer and why this all unfolded the way it did, is because he went after it and he connected and he deserved to win it.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, you just see, you know, when I look at this matchup, I look at it like Nadal is going to play his base level and then a little bit better, and he can still win this match. For me, because the matchup is so against Federer, and you can clearly see that in their career head-to-head, which has been dominated by Rafa in every category, Federer has to basically zone. And he did that. I mean, when it counted, when he needed it, I mean, listen, if you had told me that this guy is going to come in here and be down 3-1 in the fifth and then still come back to reel off five straight games, I mean, that's remarkable, realistically, if you think about it. I mean, he just, that cross-court backhand was incredible off the returns, in the rallies, short angles. And he hit that nice chip one close to the end to break him for 5-3, the first point of the game when Nadal was serving. And it was just really nice variety, really good forehands. He looked fresh. It'll be telling to see how much this, you know, really took out of him. I think, you know, you're going to see Nadal rebound. I don't know if he's playing some clay events in February, both obviously gearing towards Indian Wells. But we'll see how Federer rebounds. I mean, at this point, I don't think he really cares if he wins Dubai or not, but it's a question of, can he keep it going? I believe Federer is going to be ranked around 10 in the world after this, coming from 17 to 10, as he's gained, I think, over 1,200 points. And we know Nadal has gained 1,200 points. 1,200 points because he lost first round last year. That's massive for him. I think he's about 6 in the world now. So now you're seeing really interesting dynamic parts over where we have Murray, who was a little bit jaded from that sensational end to 2016. Djokovic, who at the moment has kind of mentally checked out. He's going to have to regroup. You have Stan, who, again, nice performance by him. I don't think he can hang his head too low. You have Milos, who once again, Parsa, you know, that durability factor with the lanky Canadian is in question. He's subsequently also pulled out of Davis Cup. Doesn't really look good for him. I could definitely see a slide for Milos this year just because he's got a lot of points to defend, especially leading up until Wimbledon and throughout that tournament. And then you're going to have Nadal feeling good. He's back at, you know, 5-6 in the world. Fed's back in the top 10. He's reigning now Grand Slam champion. Last time he won a tournament was Wimbledon 2012 in terms of the majors. So it just sets up such an amazing foundation for the rest of this year on the men's side, and I can't wait. So, you know, overall, what do we take away on the men's side from this Australian Open, and how do you think this impacts the rest of this year before we sign off for this week?
I mean, I think what we take from the Australian Open is that it's the best Grand Slam that we can remember in terms of excitement, in terms of level of tennis, in terms of parity, in terms of, you know, even though it was a return of the old guard, it was still the new in that it hasn't been what has normally been happening, which is the boring Djokovic-Murray matchup at the end of the tournament. Instead, you know, you've got your superstars out there battling for history, and you've got the Williams sisters back there, you know, doing the same, and it's just, you know, it was a great, great tournament. And, you know, the second part of the question was how it bodes well for the year.
Yes.
You know, I think, you know, I kind of say this every year, but it's awesome to have an off season, you know, because then you get this Australian Open and then you get the rest of the year to see how it all unfolds. And, you know, it's the 2017 season is in full gear, very exciting. And who doesn't want to see Federer and Nadal climbing back up the rankings and making some noise and being high seeds at the U.S. Open or even Wimbledon, and, you know, seeing what kind of damage they can occur there and see how this whole dynamic is going to play out. Will Djokovic recover? Will Murray rest up and get his legs back underneath him? Will Nadal dominate the clay like I think he will? Because he's back to that level again. And so, and he's only 30, Nima. You know, what happens if you know, the question really needs to be asked, you know, is Nadal really done physically at 30? I mean, we're talking about Williams at 36 and Venus Williams at 37 and Federer at almost 36. 30, he's a young guy, no?
Well, I think he's an old 30, to be honest with you, because he's been playing since he was 15. So this is, what, his 16th year on tour? Yes, I mean, chronologically, he's still a young guy. He's going to be 31 during the friendship. He makes the semis there. I think that's where he celebrates his birthday historically. But yeah, I mean, on paper, still very young. You see, guys, I mean, look at how many guys are playing. I mean, Haas is still trying to do something at 38, 39. Karlovic is going to be 38 this year. You have Estrella Burgos, you have all of Feliciano Lopez, all these guys are like 35 years old, still top 100 players. So definitely these guys are dangerous, and they're just incredible players, incredible people. And I'm very proud of the class that both of these great champions have shown. And Parsa, we see, I mean, what I don't think you I would challenge a lot of sports. I know tennis is not by any means one of the biggest sports out there, but people get super excited for Federer and Nadal. I mean, people who I put up posts on my personal Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, whatever, and you just see people coming out of the woodwork and supporting. People texting me at 4 in the morning. Are you watching this? You know what I mean? 3 in the morning Eastern Standard Time, 6 in the morning. They're still watching. They're not doing that for Djokovic and Murray, with all due respect to those two great champions. That's just my opinion. And unless you're a diehard tennis fan, you just kind of maybe watch the replay or tune in, later in the day just to see the score. But for these two guys, you know, people will go, you know, to the ends of the earth, come out of everywhere just to get a good look. And that's just a testament to this rivalry, to the people that they are, and to what they've brought to tennis and towards sports in general. And it's
Yeah,
just,
no question. They
yeah.
transcend the boundaries of the
Yes.
sport, and they go into just athletics, into worldwide news, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
It's the
exactly.
headline, and these guys are worldly figures and global citizens that represents the human species, I think, hopefully to the best that there is, you
Yes.
know. And it's great to have them back on top, and have them back as part of the conversation, because it's great for the sport.
No question. And Parsa, before we sign off for today, one last thing, and I think a lot of people are interested in hearing this. Andy Roddick, who was recently nominated into the Tennis Hall of Fame, which is well deserved for him, he made a great point before this match. He said, "This is for me the biggest tennis match in history, for the reason that, you know, Federer hasn't won a Grand Slam for over 4 years. Nadal, if he wins this, he'll have at least two of each Grand Slam to join Laver, especially in the modern era. That is just outstanding. You have Federer going for 18, which then would put him 4 away from Nadal, 6 away from Djokovic. Whereas if Nadal wins this, he's at 15, Federer stays at 17, and Djokovic is still at 12. Everything is much closer. Now that Federer has solidified his 18th tournament win here in the majors, how does that change the landscape of him going down as the greatest overall Grand Slam winner? Do you see Rafa Nadal winning 4 or 5 majors? Is Federer done? And now can Djokovic regroup and get another 6 or 7 before, you know, he's all said and done? Because he's going to be 30 in a few months himself. And as you said, 30 is not old, but when you look at, you know, how many guys are winning majors after 30, it's slim pickings there. And that's, I think, the million-dollar question here, because, you know, Federer hasn't won a tournament major for almost 5 years, Parsa. You know what I mean? Nadal has not now won a tournament. French Open comes up, it's going to be 3 years. He hasn't won a Grand Slam for 3 years, because if he wins the French, it'll be 3 years. Joker, obviously, he just won a couple last year. Murray's coming off of Wimbledon. You know, Stan's been in the mix, but it's not easy. You know what I mean? After 30, yeah, they're still competitive. They're making semifinals, but are they winning these tournaments? And so what I'm saying is that how does this change the race for becoming the greatest Grand Slam champion of all time?
I mean, the obvious would be that Federer gained one on his next closest rival, and he didn't allow Nadal to win one. And instead, he won it. So that was best case scenario for Federer. It's just the obvious, Nima. The gap becomes wider, and the ask becomes more difficult. Can somebody do it? I mean, it remains to be seen. It depends on so many factors, but I guess it's possible. I guess the dominance is possible, but I'm not sure that it was ever anything that. Is something that we can really control, other than saying, "Hey, the gap is widening." Instead of going the other way, it's Federer that's gaining on top, and he's going to keep trying to go. That's for sure.
I truly believe that, and it was interesting, because one of the Canadian buddies here, John Horn, he private messaged me, and he also put it up on Twitter, because Federer kind of alluded to, and you said it earlier, not really talked about. I think it was maybe clarified during when you went on the ESPN set after. I wasn't able to watch that because our TSN feed here cut out. I went to SportsCenter. But did Federer kind of say that, you know, if I don't see you guys next year, then this year was great, as to say that this would be his last year? Or, you know, is he going to play for another 3-4 years? Because I truly hope that he does, because he's just such an amazing figure. And Parsa, you see, just look at all the players, men's and women's. They're all going crazy. You know what I mean? Like Federer, awesome, this, that. Every single player on their Twitter put up something. I didn't see really Murray or Joker doing anything. That's maybe just because I haven't seen it, so I don't. If they have, then that's great. But I didn't really see them say anything. But you saw Milos and slew of other players, you know, congratulate these guys. And I think everybody's excited. And everybody knows that the market value of tennis in general, overall, is heightened when Roger Federer is still in the game.
No doubt about it. We all love to see what can happen and what can unfold. And
yes,
only the game gets put into the very best light in the world. And this Australian Open was tremendous. And I hope everyone got to watch it. And I hope tennis can match it in the next slam coming up in Roland Garros.
You got it, my friend. So, Parsa, as you and I and everybody else out there returns to normal sleeping patterns tonight, as the Australian Open has finally ended, we look forward now to a relatively quiet February. There's obviously some great tournaments in Dubai and Rotterdam, and you know some nice women's events too. But we will really look forward now to Indian Wells and then subsequently Miami, two blockbuster events for the ATP and WTA. So with that said, Parsa, you know, that's the next time we'll be checking in for, you know, the beginning of the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells, California, to preview that. So I say once again, thank you, Parsa, for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure for anybody looking to get down now to either Indian Wells or Miami to hit up Top Notch Tennis Tours, which is the sister company of Grand Slam Tennis Tours, for all your ticket, traveling, and package needs. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to hit up Parsa Sammy @ParsaSammy on Twitter, myself @TennisConnected. You can also follow Tennis Connected on Instagram, our Facebook page, our brand new shiny website. You can also download this podcast on iTunes or subsequently listen to it right off of the Tennis Connected homepage. Thanks once again for listening and supporting Parsa and I throughout, you know, our passion for the sport. And we look forward to catching up with you guys in about a month's time to preview the BNP Paribas. Be good, and we'll talk soon. Bye.